Owen Slot, yet another magnificent global exclusive this morning in the paper. How do you do it? We understand exclusively from the Times that Danny Cipriani is going to join Gloucester.
Yeah, no, it does get tiring after a while. Like, week after week, the pressure's on to be ahead with the news. You might have read on the Telegraph website that Danny Cipriani is going to Gloucester, but they did have it up 2 hours after us, so it was a nice try.
Very good. We're just back from Bilbao and the Basque Country. I had a glass of Basque cider when I was out there, and you've never tasted anything so horrific and ghastly in all your life.
It certainly hit you Saturday night, though, didn't it?
There was stuff in that glass that I hate to think what it was. So,
do you think Jerome Garces had a bit of that as well before the game?
Welcome to the Ruck, everybody. On an auspicious day for Irish, auspicious weekend for Irish rugby, auspicious season for Irish rugby. And we're going to talk about Irish rugby, but not only that, we can talk about Danny Cipriani, the upcoming semi-finals of both the Pro 14 and the Aviva Premiership, lots of lovely stuff, and also, for you paying fans, the incredible costs you have to pay and what you actually have to go through to support your team. First of all, let's go straight to our Dublin studio, where we've got Peter O'Reilly, our distinguished Irish rugby correspondent, and today filling the post of Chief Gloater. Pete, I don't mean that at all, Pete. First of all, you are, I don't know if everybody knows this, a distinguished cricketer, former player for Ireland, your daughter likewise. Must be a great weekend for you all round, because Ireland are playing a test cricket match and faring pretty well.
Yeah, it was some weekend, Steve. Hi guys. To go from a Champions Cup final in Bilbao featuring an Ireland team to come back to watch the Irish cricket team play against Pakistan and Malahide in their first ever test match, and it was a great gathering of former Irish players, so I got to see a few people that I hadn't seen for a while. It was a very pleasant day, very pleasant weekend.
You've got to Ireland all the best. It's not easy to come into Test cricket, but they deserve their place. Some years ago, in the years of O'Driscoll and O'Connell, it was described as the golden era for Irish rugby. But have we now got a sort of golden era? Because Ireland dominated the Six Nations. Leinster never really looked like, well, they never looked like losing the final, but they certainly have been the best team in it. I mean, a lot to write about even when teams are bad, but you must be really loving the possibilities and loving the energy of Irish rugby.
The success of Ireland and Leinster, you could say, are pretty much linked. It is a bit of a, it seems like a bit of a golden era, but I suppose it will become one if Leinster push on and continue to win. And looking at some of the quality they've got coming through, you think that they probably would be capable of that. There's a bit of an upstairs downstairs thing going on in Irish rugby, though. You've got Leinster winning all around them. It's only the second team to win 9 out of 9 to win the Champions Cup. And Munster, I suppose you could say, did pretty well to get to a semi-final in Europe. That's probably about the extent of their reach at the moment, given the quality that's available to them. And then you have Ulster having a nightmare season on and off the pitch, and Connacht have just got rid of their coach, Kieran Kane. So there's a slightly two-tier aspect to it, which mightn't be that healthy if you have one team as far out in front of the others as Leinster are.
Going back to the game, I see you were in a bit of a rush, as we all are, for deadlines on Saturday and for flights, etc. But just with a bit more sober reflection, what's your view of the Leinster performance and how tight the game was?
Froze a little bit on it. You've got to give credit to Rassing for shutting them down. There was no quick ball at all. So it was a very tense, sort of nervous occasion. I don't think it's a final that we're going to look back on with a great bit of pleasure, a deal of pleasure in future years. It looked like it was going to extra time. So immediately you're thinking about check-in times and that sort of thing. It was very tense. But I thought it was interesting that Leo Cullen, who doesn't show a lot of emotion generally, I spotted him in tears afterwards. Just briefly, he got a bit emotional. But he made the point that it was, for him, it was almost as satisfying as any other win,
sure,
given that they'd been forced to win ugly, and they showed that they could do that, having played some beautiful rugby on the way to the final.
As Leo Cullen in tears, I think if I'd coached someone to the European Championship and someone else had got all the credit, I'd be in tears as well. But
who are you talking about, Steve?
In the Times this morning, at least in the headline, and I think it was really borne out in the copy, you said it was a disappointing game, a little bit like Peter, in terms of the lack of sweep and spectacle and tries.
There was a lack of tries because there wasn't a try. It wasn't easy on the eye, but I thought it was brilliant as a contest, and finals are often like that. I thought it was an interesting comment on rugby, in that you have the two heavyweights of European rugby. We have to call them that because they were the two finalists, and defences were so good that no one could break through them. And I thought it was ironic that Teddy Thomas was trying to do something off the cuff different at the end to try and win the match, and in fact what he managed to do was lose the match in the process. I mean, it was an absolutely abysmal decision that he made to try and run right around a group of forwards in a line out inside his own 22. Total madness. But it was a comment on the game. Flair wasn't there wasn't much room for flair on that, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, well, the thing about that is, for a large part of this season, you look at Leinster's team and try to marshal them with your defence is a bit like trying to herd flies. But in that game, the rush defence from Racing was so impressive, led by Henry Chavoncy. I mean, offside sometimes, but
he had a good game.
Led by him. And then when you're pushing Leinster guys back into the middle of the park and you've got Camille Shah and Good King Wenceslas Laurie waiting there, it was a fantastic defensive display. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Yannick Nianga, who said after the game that he will be retiring from rugby at the end of this season. What a servant to French rugby he's been. And, you know, he deserved a spectacle, but actually the way he played meant that Leinster never really could get out of the shackles.
I think I tend towards Alan. Also, I probably disagree. I mean, I thought of its type, it was one of the great finals. It was unbelievably compelling, and in a great stadium, it had the authenticity of a final. Most World Cup finals and football finals are not actually ever that brilliant, but I just thought it was terrific. I mean, I know that journalists are always interviewing two people they met in a pub, and then they take their opinion as gospel. But the staff in our hotel went down almost en bloc. That was probably why the service was so crap there. But they absolutely loved it. And I agree with Al. I mean, I thought Vakatawa defended magnificently. And there was a delight for me in seeing Sexton and all his armoury being shut down. But did he stop trying to create? No, he didn't. He kept on going. And I loved it. I thought it was an epic final of its kind, Peter.
You say that they kept trying to create. I thought he tried to tap and go just before half time. That obviously backfired. I thought when Sexton went for the long range penalty 10 minutes into the second half, rather than kick into the 22, that felt to me like almost an admission that this is a game that's going to be won by penalties, because it was almost a tip of the cap to Racing's defence, and an acknowledgement that Leinster were finding it difficult. We have to make the point, for those who watched on television, that it was very wet there, it was very slippy, and that did play into the hands of the defences and put them on top. And while you can admire the defence and you can admire Racing in terms of their tenacity, and they disproved all that stuff about French teams not being fit or having the guts to go 80. I think to have a really classic final, I think you need to have a bit of a balance between attack and defence. That defence can't dominate completely, and that's why I don't think we will look back on it as a great occasion.
Owen, occasion-wise, how did you rate it? Let's leave aside for a moment the difficulties and the cost of getting there.
Occasion-wise, I thought it was great. The stadium was magnificent. Those high-steepled stands, packed out for the final, lots of colours from the two different teams. Brilliant. I did sit there thinking it was a bit quiet at times. You get more noise from Leinster when you watch both the games. The quarterfinal and semi-final seemed to be rowdier. It didn't really feel very rowdy. And yet, as you say, both teams were in it right until the final second.
One of the other things was, and this is definite, and it was proved by by online applications, there were loads of Spaniards there, but actually, heroically, Leinster and Racing fans came along in decent numbers, but didn't actually swamp the stadium. Now, are we getting into the stage now where the game is being seriously affected by the huge, avaricious markup in hotel and airline prices?
It's certainly finals and major events in rugby are falling into the trap of becoming events for rugby tourists rather than diehard fans of certain clubs. It comes down to, I think a lot of the time, it comes down to the haves and the have-nots. Can you afford to follow your team through Europe? I mean, Pete can talk to this in greater detail about the fact that I remember saying this on social media over the weekend. Is, can you imagine forking out the astronomical fees that you have to pay for hotels for a major event, buying a ticket for the event itself, turning up to get your flight, and then being told that it's overbooked because greedy airlines have just gone, well,
Peter,
we get as many
were
people
you not on that flight where they were, people were told to get off, it was overbooked?
I was, yeah. It was entertaining if it wasn't so sad. They started offering, I think they started bidding at €250 for anybody who would give up their seat because Aer Lingus had overbooked the flight.
Did you put your hand up at that stage, or did you wait for a better offer?
I heard a Leinster fan saying that, you know, maybe if there were Munster fans there, they might have taken the cash. But some of those people had paid €700 or €800 for a day trip, just for the flight, which is ridiculous. And obviously what happens is EPCR invite tenders, you know, to be the host city, and then tourist boards obviously pay EPCR for the right to host. So it's a dangerous game that the EPCR are playing there, because they're risking alienating rugby fans.
Is it not true, Peter, then, lads, that actually wherever you go now for big rugby, be it Six Nations, even Lions Tours, and the latter stages, that everywhere you go, you suddenly got a times four increase in hotels and whatnot? And it's something that we in our ivory towers have got to address. I spoke to loads and loads of fans. There's another group of fans now that go to the final every year, even if their team's in it or not. Absolutely loved it, but there's a real sort of look in their eye where they say, God, this has cost me as much as a holiday. Al, do you think we have to address it? I mean, you cannot stop. You can't say, right, Bilbao, you've got the semi-final, or you've got the final, but sorry, you can't change hotel prices, because the hotels have nothing to do with the organisers.
I mean, we've spoken about this before on the podcast, about how part of the tender process for the Rugby World Cup, people were promising that they'd spoken to hoteliers about fixing prices so that they weren't screwing the pooch on that one. Maybe it's time to start getting people, if you're going to put a tender in, you've got to make sure that it's actually affordable for folk. I mean, we were talking off-air before we came on here about the final in Newcastle. You know, St James Park next year, a fantastic venue, great to see rugby in the north of England. Hotel prices already spiralling for that. And it's insane. And at some point you've got to say, look, can we make it sure so that actually someone who's a diehard fan who's not completely minted gets a chance to go and watch some rugby?
You could always have these matches in, say, Dublin, Cardiff, Twickenham, where you can, people are used to travelling and can get there in one flight. But where would be the promotional value of that? And the promotional value to Spanish rugby, the rising force, was excellent. Should they carry on taking the tournament out in the boat, Owen?
Absolutely, without a doubt. But you just have to... I thought it was a whopping success and a crashing failure at both at the same time, because to take it to a new place was brilliant, and they have to carry on that. But they picked a city that was hard to get to, where it wasn't a huge city, so accommodation was harder. They did the smart thing, but they also made it really hard for the punters. In many ways, you know, there are lots of Leinster fans there, but thank goodness they had a home quarterfinal, a home semi-final, so they could save up their money.
Peter, where would you be looking to take it? Do you support the basic concept, yeah, or do you want to go back to the old guard nations?
What about all three rounds, three knockout rounds in your home turf next time, Pete?
Yeah.
No, I think if you want to go to a new country, you want to go to Barcelona, then you've got a city then that can...
Agreed completely.
Al, are we going to take it round, or do you want them all in the ground you can walk to?
No, I think Dundee is probably the best place.
I agree with that. Look, you've got the Open this year, don't be greedy. Pete, just ask us one more question. All eyes now turn to the possibility of a double, or indeed... Rather, can anyone stop Leinster? How do you see the game on the weekend, and how do you see the rest of the Pro 14?
Leinster have actually never won a European Pro 12 or Pro 14 double. Certainly, I know in 2013 they won the Challenge Cup and the Pro 12, but they've never done a proper double. And in 2011, after that comeback final against Northampton, they went down to Limerick for the final of the Pro 12, as it was then, the following week, and Munster turned them over. And they're going to be physically drained, emotionally drained as well. So it's a good test for Leo Cullen. He does have depth. He can bring in guys like Jack McGrath, Reece Ruddock.
Glad it's in the Aviva. We wouldn't like you to have to go to a game you couldn't walk to. Let's ask you one more thing before we let Peter go. Is this the greatest season in Irish rugby history, or at least the greatest one that you've reported?
2009, there was a Leinster Heineken Cup and the Grand Slam. And the Grand Slam in that case, you know, was the first in 61 years. So that really did seem momentous at the time. But I think if Leinster can go on and do a double, then that would put them in the top spot.
Peter, in Dublin, thanks a million. Enjoy and catch up soon. Al, this Friday we've got another semi-final. Big win for both clubs. We've got Glasgow playing the Scarlets. Two teams desperate for glory. Huge game. How do you see it, and what's the keys?
Well, I think a lot of people would actually see this as an audition to see who replaces Warren Gatland as head coach of Wales. We've got Dave Rennie versus Wayne Pivac, who a lot of people are saying are the front runners, although Pivac seems to have his nose in front with his experiences at the Scarlets. It's a difficult one to call, actually. I've spoken to some people who say this is a genuine 50-50, you can flip a coin, because Glasgow have been fantastic at home. They've beaten Leinster there. I mean, they actually haven't lost to Leinster in the league this season. They've got some big results there. But last time they faced the Scarlets, Scarlets romped ahead 26-8 to win that one. And in fact, the key for that game was Finn Russell went off at halftime. He must have had the circus theme playing in his head. He just did not seem at the races all day. Glasgow have played some phenomenal rugby this season, but we know that Scarlets are capable of pulling it out of the bag. It'll be a fantastic occasion. I think the good thing for a lot of people is that, I mean, you can put quotation marks around this, they both play rugby in the right kind of way, the way that people like to see. So certainly you'd imagine it should be entertaining. You know, it'll be a fast ground as well because of the artificial turf in Glasgow. It should be fun, but so much of it depends on whether or not that Scarlets pack, who dominated Glasgow in that game that they won 26-8, whether they get top on Glasgow, because Glasgow can be out-muscled. That is the key to beating them.
I think that could be very, very tight and, as I say, very, very significant. But even though you would, Al, probably say that you'd go in second favourites in the final, whoever wins it.
Absolutely. I mean, Leinster on a... Although what Pete neglected to mention there was that Leinster did lose a final at the weekend. The British and Irish Cup. Leinster lost to Ealing Trailfinders.
We should pay tribute to Ealing Trailfinders. Absolutely fantastic. Good for them. Good on them.
Absolutely. But, you know, a double, it's well within the capabilities of this Leinster team. And playing at the Aviva, we've seen time and again this season... in knockout rugby, they are just superb when they play in front of that crowd.
I'd say I didn't know that final was in the Aviva. I mean, Christmas. What it's a bit preposterous, isn't it?
I know,
can we
it
not
is.
Make it a bit harder for them?
Well it's the final will be at Celtic Park the season after, which is as we were mentioning, taking it to different places. It's a new stadium. Yes, it's in Glasgow, where we've seen Glasgow play, but it's a big new venue. So it's, you know, continuing that theme.
If they continue the theme of Leinster being home, if I was Celtic, I'd enter it myself next year, visit Celtic Park. They're bound to make the final. Owen, let's go down to some of the minor rugby countries now. It's the Aviva Premiership semi-finals this week. Two crackers, Saracens, Wasps and Exeter and Newcastle. And the attention switches back to Saracens in a way. First of all, Sarries, Wasps. Massive game for Wasps in that this sort of slight soft underbelly that they have could come to the fore. But how do you see that one?
Well, I think the Saracens thing's interesting. Just coming off what we're talking about, Leinster, and the theme from Europe was the way it's been reported a lot is this is not the culmination. It's a team that's going places. It could be one of the great dynasties, etc. It's just going to get better and better. And I was thinking, that is what we all said about Saracens last year and the year before. I mean, it just proves that you can have one great season, but just because you've got a few kids who are going to be better in 3 or 4 years' time, it doesn't mean that it's just that you are just on a roll that can't be stopped.
Oh, I totally agree. Just as an interpolation there, I still think the feat of Toulon to win it 3 years running was just unbelievably, almost beyond words.
Yeah, that is dynasty, to be fair.
Is that dynasty or dynasty?
It depends where you're from regionally.
Well, you should call it dynasty when John Collins was in it, and who's that? Linda Evans. She's quite nice.
You're speaking
as well.
To me like I know.
Oh no, I used to watch all that. Like, yeah, she used to wear these big shoulder pads and everything, and that was the blokes.
Was she not in Dallas?
She was she's in Dynasty.
Oh, give, that was
Linda. Linda Gray was in.
Linda Gray
Dallas.
Was in Dallas. Sorry, yeah. Alex, editor, can you edit out that error? Because people just think I know nothing.
No, I know you don't. Well, you don't know a lot about the old soaps. What about Falcon Crest? Do you remember that? You used to watch that?
Yeah, Newcastle Falcon Crest.
That's
brilliant.
One, yeah, that's
brilliant.
One. Dean Richards.
Starring Dean Richards and Johnny Wilkinson.
Saracens, possibly with Billy back. Must be favourites, though.
Completely for me, they've got a lot of their best players back. They've sort of been coming in sort of week after week, haven't they? Michael Rhodes came back, Billy came back for a week, said hi, and then got injured again. They're brilliant at peaking in May. We've seen that in successive years. And as you say, Wasps, delicious team to watch, but they're defensively pretty average. And I just wonder, we'll talk about Haskell and Cipriani in a minute, but that they've got two of their big senior men backing out, so that might do something. That might do a lot for them, or might do the opposite.
Oh,
yeah, I think the greatest concern for Wasps is if you look at the recent record of Saracens, if you look at what they've done throughout April, they have stacked up games where in the second half they have not conceded a single point and poured on points themselves. That, if you're Dai Young, that is exactly what you're looking at and saying, right, that's flashing danger signs there.
Who's Blake Carrington playing for this weekend?
Blake Carrington had blue hair, you know.
I know.
He was supposed to be grey, but it was blue. He had a blue rinse.
I think you look good that. You tried the blue rinse?
I've got the grey rinse at the moment. Second semi-final, Newcastle. We keep on saying, well, they'll never win that. This week, you think they'll never win that.
Well, absolutely. And they've really thumbed their nose at a lot of people this year.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that's impressed most people is their firepower. They can hang in games, which is fantastic, and then they've got these incredible attacking weapons out wide. But that's not the way that Exeter Chiefs play rugby. They choke you to death by holding onto that ball and saying, you ain't getting anywhere near this for as long as possible. They've, you know, if anything, this is the biggest uphill climb they've had all season. Now, it would be a fantastic narrative, but in my head, I can just see Exeter Chiefs doing what they've done all year.
Well, you're that thumbing your nose thing. I've never used that expression before. Should we use it more on this programme?
Thumbing your nose?
Yeah, that's what you said. Al said that Newcastle's been thumbing their nose at everyone. No,
yeah.
But I get what you're saying, but I think we need more of that.
Yeah, more thumbing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for that, Al.
Okay.
You're welcome.
I can't miss my nose if I try and thumb it, that's for sure.
I can't miss your feet.
What do you mean? We're not going back to Shoegate, are we?
Well, you've just got legendary feet.
I know.
Even when you keep your shoes.
I know.
Sorry, this is an in-joke for those who were still listening from the Lions tour decades ago.
Right.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Danny Cipriani's in the news, especially if you read the Times, or he was first in the news. He's a bit like the Marmite man. People say he doesn't fit in and he's not a team man, and people treat him, talk about the old days of his behaviour as if he was a mass murderer. I'm afraid I don't buy any of that. recently, the game is full of bash, 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 round the corner, go through 50 phases and try and get a penalty goal. Recently, the last time Danny came out for Wasps, I think they scored 4 tries from the first phase with pure brilliance from the Wasps back division. I think Gloucester have got an absolute gem, and I think he is exactly what they need, because with Danny Cipriani, you cannot have a bunch of blunderers outside him. Now, they've got Billy Twelvetrees, who's playing out of his skin. Henry Trinder on the wing is a ridiculous omission from the England party. I think Danny, it's not the most glamorous club, Gloucester. Sorry, Gloucester, but you can always go to Cheltenham for a night out. But I think it's a great signing. I think he's a great player. Owen.
Struggle to disagree with much of what you said, but you have to ask. You're suggesting that this confusion, this dislike, this Marmite thing, etc., is a fabrication. But I'm sorry, Steve, it isn't. I mean, I'm not talking about when he got in the papers 27 years ago because he got pissed when he was 13 or whatever. I mean, that's not what we're talking about at all. The question is, why, if he's the best attacking 10 in Europe, which arguably he is, I don't dispute that, then why are Wasps letting him go? Similar question, he's been on the market since about October. Wasps knew that he was going and his agent was putting around. Why did no one pick him up? There's a reason for that. It's because he's bloody hard to work with. He is the ultimate individualist in a team. If you speak to people at the clubs that he's played at, then the evidence is bountiful, and I don't think he means to be a pain in the butt, but people find him hard to work with, and that is categorical.
Well, I've not spoken to anyone who said anything other than he's great to have in the club. So
we'll share numbers afterwards.
We must have spoken to different people. Yeah. This thing is not a team man. What is anything more of a team man than being so outstanding as an attacking player that you put player after player after player in for scores and make them look good?
Well, I can understand why Gloucester want him, firstly. Because if you look at the way that they've played with their new head coach, Ackerman, this season, Ackerman made no excuses about the fact, and he's spoken to the squad about this, is that they will attack from anywhere, much like he did with the Lions in Super Rugby. They will have a go from anywhere. And to be honest, what Gloucester have struggled for large parts of this season, and you know, we saw elements of it in that Challenge Cup final, is a shepherd. They need someone to take a game by the reins and go, we're going to put the ball there, it's going to go there, I'm going to have a go and do that. It might not always be the right thing, but they needed conviction. You've name-dropped Billy Twelvetrees there, and I'm a big fan of Billy Twelvetrees and what he can do, but he can drift out of games, particularly those moments where you say he's got to take it by the reins. If anything else, it might blow up in people's faces, but at least you know that Cipriani's going to back himself.
I agree, and also... I think that I understand that Gloucester have said, instead of you having to fit in with us, everybody says you've got to fit in, we'll fit in with you. And that is exactly what they should do.
Well, that's almost the point, is he's going there. He's not going to fight for his place. He's going to go there expecting to be the number one 10 and expecting everything to happen around him.
Let's just talk about Owen characters as well, which we're very short of. We've all interviewed so many dullards. Shotbritz, James Haskell, Danny Cipriani, almost departing this year. Where are the characters? Name one, name two. Where are the characters left in rugby? The pirates, the ruffians, the funny men, the people who can understand that media management is actually is media banning.
You didn't put this on our homework. We'd have sat down and scratched our heads.
It's heads up podding now.
I think, Jesus, we've never done that before. I think as a generalisation, you're right, but we of course it doesn't work across the board. Okay, a name, Jack Now. We could play word association.
We're just wrapping up now. First of all, Al, we should pay tribute to Cardiff after an excellent final win against Gloucester. Gloucester well up. But tribute to Cardiff, not won anything for ages, played fast rugby, bold, passionate, good effort.
Absolutely, and the cojones on Anscombe. You've got to admire that. I mean, to be fair, again, we talk about people taking games by the scruff of the necks. He played an adventurous or tried to play an adventurous style for large parts of that game. He's clearly a talented guy, and it seems like finally he's had something break for him. You know, fantastic for him to get that moment at the end of the game, and Danny Wilson departing for that. And actually, the other guy you want to give a nod to is Tau Felice. Just unbelievable what a career he's had into his 40s. playing games like that. I mean, you talk about great characters. He might not be an outgoing fella, but what a servant to rugby he has been. That's
Isn't it just such a shame that Cardiff have finally they've underperformed. They've not been some of their players for a long time. They finally seem to be getting some decent momentum together, and the man you mentioned, Danny Wilson, is leaving. I mean, it's just nonsense.
It's crazy, and the guy who's coming in, no one's ever heard of, with great respect to him.
Is that Scott Wisemantle?
No, it's some other bloke. Anyway, just I'm not going to ask you both the hardest question that we've ever been asked on the podcast, lads, because we've given everything a really good airing. We're now going to finally say Eddie Jones's squad for South Africa. Owen, just very, very briefly, sum up what on earth that lot is.
Can we have some of that Bass cider before we do this? Sum it up. You can't sum it up. So I wrote a long piece about it in the Friday paper, and then all weekend I kept on thinking, oh shit, I forgot to mention that. What about that? That doesn't make sense. I mean, there's so much in there. My overriding thoughts were, he hasn't rested enough players. He should have rested more players. And then I was thinking, why hasn't he included X, Y, and Z? I mean, Armand is the case in point. Dave Atwood, one of your brothers, Steve. I know you love him, but I just cannot get why he wouldn't be in there. I mean, just doesn't make sense. And then I was just looking today at Mark Wilson appearing there. Great, brilliant, but what? But why, when he was a success in Argentina, did he vanish and come back again? So baffled, excited by some of it. You know, delighted that Dan Robson, who I've been suggesting for ages should be in there, is in there. Cipriani's going to be really exciting. One of these kids, hopefully one of them will be really good. So, yeah, great. But as a whole, does it make sense? No. Is that a summary, or is that just...
No, that's fine. It doesn't make any sense to me. Seeing every person in there has been selected on a different principle. Al, make some sense out of it for us.
Well,
good luck.
What it reads like, actually, is he's gone, I'm going to pick a team that's going to be left field and a bit of experimentation. Oh, but hold on, what if we've got a chance to win it? Maybe I should have X, Y, Z in there just in case we have a chance to win it. The thing that blows my mind still is that, he's finally brought in Robson. Fantastic. And he's got a number of scrum halves that he can play with there. Ben Spencer's also in the mix. But then you go, why has he still only got two hookers? What happens if one of them gets injured? Someone's going to have to fly in from somewhere. This is structurally, it doesn't make any sense to me.
And you look at the kids he's brought in, or the young cap players he's brought in, like Dan Robson, for instance. You go, well, this should have happened a year ago. I mean, that's the point.
However, what I will say is, and there are excitement elements of this, and I'll tell you what, people in South Africa, looking at this squad, there's enough in here for people in South Africa to say, well, thank God that they're bringing a decent squad up to play against us and have some good test footy, because they're not very impressed with the team that Wales have got that will be playing against them in the US. So what I will say is that there are people in South Africa that are saying, yeah, this could be good fun.
The concept of fun hasn't entered my head on that one yet, but thank you, Peter O'Reilly in Dublin. Thanks, Al, in the studio here, and Owen too. Stick with us till the end of the season. Bitter end or the sweet end, we don't know. Also, this time we should think of all those retiring at the end of the season, and also it's been a big season for injuries, so we should just wish a big comeback and good rehab to everyone who's injured. And on a personal note, to Ivo Slot, who's recently had a big operation, very promising halfback. Ivo, don't mope around there, get out and do your rehab. Message from Dad. Thank you.